visiting with IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson, a native of Cambridge, Illinois. As we begin our conversation today, a lot of attention about e-gaming. Craig Anderson, is that right, the IHSA considering a potential state tournament series? People call it video gaming. Take it away. What about that?
Yeah, well, it's created a lot of excitement and discussion around the state for sure. I would say we're not for the 18-19 school year, but I would anticipate in years to come it will be something our board will consider looking at and adopting a state series in esports or gaming. There's a lot of interest amongst high school students and their activity in that. And so, you know, if we can help, establish a state series in that helps the competitive nature of it, you know, that's something that we're looking to do. So, we're looking at it.
I know you've had some preliminary survey or some preliminary data, and how many schools already have teams or have expressed interest in forming teams? That's kind of the motivation behind this.
It is, yeah, and that was our board heard in early October of this past school year a report from a group to kind of take a look at this, so they charged us to put it on our emerging sport activity list, which allows our schools to tell us that they have a team. And at last check, we were around 25 schools, though I anticipate we have more than that. It's likely some just haven't reported to us. And as that list continues to grow and schools tell us they have competitive teams, then that will cause us to continue the discussion and look towards establishing, you know, some bylaws related to what season schedule limitations, if that's necessary, might look like, and then you know, take the steps that we have in the past in establishing contest limits, dates, end of the season, dates of, you know, formats related to how the tournament schedule would look at the end of a quote season. So, yeah, all those things will be kind of domino effect happening in preparation for developing a state series in it.
I know about probably 10 or 15 years ago, I was talking with former IHSA Administrator Dave Ganaway, and I said, Dave, they really going to do bass fishing? They're going to crown a state champion in bass fishing? And he said, yep. And I guess Craig Anderson, they really going to crown a state champion in e-gaming or video gaming? There's a little tongue-in-cheek, but we saw how great the reaction was from bass fishing. And I guess you can kind of segue and say, well, maybe we can expect the same return with e-gaming.
Yeah, I really think we can. And the answer to that, I think, is yes. At some point in time, I think we're going to end up there. Nationally, we're, as we meet together as a national association of state associations, other states continue to look at it. Connecticut conducted their first state series in e-gaming last year and likely did the same this school year. So it's a national kind of thing we see growing. And if we are able to provide some structure, I think like bass fishing did, it taps into the interest of students at our member schools that we maybe don't have participating in any of our other sports or activities. While there will be some overlap, I think there's an opportunity to reach other kids to find out more about IHSA and our mission related to competition and sportsmanship and all those things that we like students that participate in our events to benefit from. So I think if we can provide that structure, much like bass fishing, we engage a set of kids, I think e-gaming is going to do the same thing for us.
All right. Explain to me how it works, okay? I know. I think if you watch, ESPN, sometimes they have some e-gaming stuff on. How does one, you know, determine what the game is that you play? Because people say, man, they're going to let those kids play, you know, a violent video game like Grand Theft Auto, and they're going to crown a state champion in that. Or how does it work, and who determines what the games are and how the competition is set up? I guess this is one of those, you know, Craig Anderson, this is, falls under the category of dummies for e-gaming or something like that. Explain to me how it works, I guess.
Yeah, well, you
all
know,
right, I should say e-gaming for dummies, I should say.
Yeah. You know, that's the good thing about what we kind of we do here at IHSA is we're going to likely form an advisory committee that's going to, with folks that have been and involved in e-gaming for a period of time and understand all the mechanics related to the questions you just asked. I'm not the expert, won't ever claim to be the expert. I, like many others, have kids of my own that I know e-game in my home more often than I'd probably like them to. But those that have a general oversight at our member schools will put on an advisory committee, and they'll likely come up with recommendations for the games that our board will agree upon. And it won't be the Grand Theft Autos and those kind of games. But I believe, you know, depending upon how the growth of this occurs, there's the possibility that, you know, we may have, like we have three seasons generally of fall, winter, and spring sports, that there's the potential that e-gaming could spread across those three seasons and have a different game for each season. And so you could reach a different level of student and different interest of student in different games. So, you know, there's a number of sport-related e-games, and then there's you know, different kind of team-related e-sport games that I could see us by a season designating one particular game to be a tournament series in, and then the next season a different game. And that's looking, obviously, in the long term if we could get to that. But I won't make the selection, but I can guarantee you it won't be one of those Grand Theft Autos or a lot of shooting and killing that for the mature audiences only kind of ranking. It's going to be something that's less than that and more about team building and those kind of things.
And you said 2019-2020 would be the earliest there would be a state tournament series in e-gaming.
That's correct, yeah. We're headed into next year, still keeping an eye on our membership related to them telling us how many schools are participating. We haven't reached the threshold where our board has said, yes, let's have a state series in it. So the very earliest I see it happening would be 1920.
Talking with Craig Anderson, Executive Director of the IHSA, a lot of information disseminated from the June IHSA Board of Director meeting, and one of the items involving weekly player limitations in football that will officially go into effect the 2019 season. However, I think they're asking member schools to try and adopt those, although they're not required this 2018 season. But basically, the limitation is two games per week for those freshman through senior high school football players, and then the limitation is one game per day. So that means kids can't play in a JV or a sophomore and varsity contest that same night. So a little bit about that new rule.
Yeah, so that recommendation came from our Sports Medicine Advisory Committee, and obviously all of this related to football is about player safety. And right now, with no limits in regards to game participation, there's the potential, and while we don't feel like it was occurring, we feel like we need to set some general parameters around some limitations for gameplay. And the Sports Medicine Committee has been working with our Football Advisory Committee for a number of years to try to get to something that's safe but yet workable. And I think they've done a nice job in limiting, but yet still giving some freedom for players to play in a significant number of games over a season. The other piece to that, and you correctly identified kind of what the recommendation of the Sports Medicine Committee that our board did approve, is that no two games could be played on consecutive days. So that two games in a week limit, they couldn't play on two consecutive days. You indicated no two games in the same day, and that's correct. But even back-to-back days of gameplay would not be allowed. And so, and the reason for the delay in implementation is we realize that schedules are generally set amongst our membership for this coming fall, and as a result, there's going to have to be some changes likely in scheduling, and this gives our schools a year to do that.
Yeah, and I know some of the coaches out there will say, come on, man, one play equals one game. And so from our, we were talking a little bit off the air with Craig Anderson, that from a scheduling standpoint, you know, when we've talked about participation numbers in the past with football and, you know, some of these rosters and the declining numbers, that a lot of times you see in these Friday nights where there's a JV game and a varsity game, some of those JV kids, that they have to play special teams or whatever, fill in there. But with this, you probably are going to have to, I mean, the member schools are going to have to look at the situation where, at least from small school conferences, you know, when you're talking about participation numbers of 50 or less with freshman through senior, you're probably, for all intents and purposes, are not going to be able to play JV and varsity games on Friday nights. I know the Lincoln-Drew Conference, for example, I think they play Friday and Tuesday now. But some of these conferences that have tried to maintain that, you know, Friday doubleheader schedule, probably they're going to have to look at potentially adjusting that.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. Yeah, the small schools will find some need to make some scheduling changes, and we've heard from coaches and, you know, in the sports medicine, like I said, spent a lot of time discussing what constitutes a game played, and, you know, there's so many what-ifs about when kids play and how many plays, and I think they finally just landed on, you know, when you participate in a play in a game, that constitutes a game played, and I think coaches are just going to have to recognize when is the opportune time to have a player play and get significant minutes to constitute that game played. And so, it wasn't that they just, you know, quick made a decision. There was a lot of discussion about what could that look like, quarter limit versus game limit, and this is, you know, ultimately what they settled on.
All right, and the other significant piece of information out of the IHSA board meeting, the June meeting, again, the IHSA does a great job of providing the information on their website, IHSA.org, so you can go to the website and see all the information. It's pretty thorough, and I know the classification for the people, they can go and look at it, but two of the things, or actually three of the things, I call it, that they looked at doing is with the three-class sport of wrestling, the enrollment classification breakdown was always 33%, 33%, 33% for the member schools. They bumped that up for wrestling to 40% of the member schools that have wrestling teams will now be Class A, and then the 30%, next 30%, 2A, next 30%, 3A, and then for the four-class sports like boys and girls basketball, volleyball, baseball, and softball, it had been an even 25% split, but now 1A and 2A will each be 27.5%, 27.5%, then 3A will be the next 22.5%, and 4A the final 22.5%. Look at the math by Jim Taylor, by the way, everybody. So again, there's a lot of information to digest here that's available on the IHSA.org website. But I think the other thing that is important here is that the enrollment classification will now be based on a two-year cycle instead of a year-to-year cycle. So this will go into effect 2019-2020. But the success factor multiplier, they're reserving final action on that until August. I don't know if there's a long story short here or a short story long, but any reaction to any of that? And I don't know if I misinterpreted any of that either.
No, you did that very well and got it exactly right as to the action that our board took just this past week. This wasn't something that we just, you know, flippantly made a decision about. We had an ad hoc committee of member school principals and ADs and put them together in a room, schools of all sizes representing, you know, our biggest school to the smallest school, and private and non-boundary schools and public schools, and they came up with these recommendations to try to take care of what were some concerns expressed by our membership that caused us to create this ad hoc committee. And so they're just minor adjustments to that classification to allow for what the committee believed to be some more equitable opportunities for competition and postseason tournament play. And so that's what they came up with. It's reasonable, I believe. Our membership has, I think, felt the wavering of 1 year to the next, those schools that are on, I'll call it the classification bubble, not knowing because of their enrollment if they might be bumped up on a given year or bumped down. They like the fact that they'll be on a two-year cycle. And the other piece to this, and this is a difficult thing, I think, to explain, and you did it very well, is that for the four class sports for public schools, when they get their classification, they're going to be classified for all of their team bracketed sports in that class. So that breakdown that you correctly indicated, we're going to use the girls softball sport and look at those enrollments and participation and divide those schools up according to the percentages you provided. And then we're going to take those enrollment cutoffs that occur in girls softball and apply those equally in terms of what the enrollment cutoff is to all of our sports. So no teams will find themselves in 2A in volleyball and 1A in girls basketball. It'll be consistent now starting in 1920.
Oh, that'll be great. Yeah, I'm glad you explained that. That most people out there say thank you for doing that. All right, and just a couple of other things. The individual wrestling state final tournament will be conducted with a true wrestleback format. So that means the only way, am I interpreting this right? The only way a competitor can be eliminated then is they have to lose on the mat. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Although, you know, when we get to the championship bracket and the championship match, in the championship, a player won't have to defeat his opponent twice.
I got you.
So, but for all wrestlers that come to our state final tournament, they're going to get at least two matches to wrestle. That's guaranteed. And so that's the part of that the coaches in particular really wanted. Our regional format is like that. The sectional individual wrestling tournament is like that. And so now we get the same thing in our state tournament. So people get a little bit confused that you think, well, double elimination, when we get to the championship, when neither wrestler has lost, that now somebody's got to, you know, beat the wrestler twice. And that's not the way this is. It's for those wrestlers that compete, they'll fall into a consolation bracket and get the opportunity to do what we call full wrestleback, and those wrestlebacks will occur for everyone, and you won't be eliminated until you, with the exception of the championship bracket, until you've had two losses.
I know some basketball tournaments that I've covered, it's been their discretion whether they want to adopt a mercy rule or not, and that's 30 points or more in the fourth quarter equates to a continuous clock. This is now a new rule that basically goes into effect for all regular season and regular season tournament games at all levels, JV, freshman, sophomore, varsity, whatever. So this has kind of been up to, you know, those regular season tournaments. It's been up to each tournament whether they want to do this or not. But now it's basically a rule going forward that is required for boys and girls basketball.
Yeah, that's correct. And that was recommended by our Boys and Girls Basketball Advisory Committee that it's within the Federation rules that state associations can adopt that. As you noted in the past, we just had adopted it in our state series and allowed the tournaments, regular season, to decide if they wanted to. But the recommendation from the committee was let's expand it and spread it across all levels, and regular and postseason. And so that's the action our board took this past Monday.
All right. And Craig Anderson saying, is Taylor going to ask me another question? Yep. Could just a couple more here as we've taken a lot of time. But boys and girls golf, basically you are adopting kind of a cut line after the Friday which is round one of the two-round state golf tournament. Now, this is kind of a, to me, kind of looks like a pretty significant change in terms of past practice. Everybody that got to the state golf tournament, boys or girls, they got to play both Friday and Saturday. However, after the first day, top eight teams and top 24 individuals will move on to round two. Can you talk a little bit about what led to that change?
Sure. Yeah, and like other changes that I've spoken to today that we've changed, this came out of our Boys and Girls Golf Advisory Committee. The group of coaches and administrators that were a part of that decided that, you know, the pace of play and the continuation to allow some golfers that fall well behind really doesn't lend itself well to a good Saturday final day tournament. And so based upon their recommendation to drop those that don't finish very well on Friday and just let the ones you noted continue on Saturday was what they thought would best suit a finals day Saturday final. We have other sports that have modeled this. Bowling, boys and girls bowling is like this. Our two-day tournament has some teams and some individuals eliminated from Friday heading into Saturday, so this just kind of brings golf into like some of our others when it comes to qualifying at the state finals in order to play on Saturday. So obviously it brings a little more competition to the Friday to make yourself available to play on Saturday. And again, we'll see how it goes this year. And, you know, we may have advisory committees in the future that say, you know, this wasn't in the best interest of students, and our board will review and consider that. But this group, our advisory committee, thought that this was a good direction to improve generally the pace of play on Saturday with fewer golfers, and obviously the better golfers coming out of Friday to have a more competitive round there on Saturday.
All right, and just the final topic, talking with Craig Anderson. I know it was a couple of months ago when I was talking to Sam Knox, who's on the IHSA administrative staff. I think he's in charge of the administrator in charge of football. And, you know, I think that the legislative town hall process is probably going to get the most attention it's ever received since it's been formed this coming fall because of the town hall meetings in relation to the district scheduling or regional scheduling, whatever you want to call it, for football. And so they'll roll that out. Member schools will have a chance to talk about it at these town hall meetings, and then enough support there gets to the ballot. Member schools will vote on it, I think, in January, somewhere around there, December, whatever, and they'll either vote it up or vote it down if it gets through the process. So I know the IHSA is getting amped up about that, and I remember when I asked Sam Knox, I said, hey, you think the IHSA can schedule football in the regular season? He's like, well, if the member schools want us to do that, we can do it. So that was the yes. So what about the anticipation with this town hall process coming up in the fall? And this is truly a member school-derived organization, that if the member schools want this stuff, they vote it up or down, or they submit the proposal and see where the legislative process takes it. So what about getting ready for that in the fall? I mean, there's going to be a lot of attention on that, I assume.
Yeah, I believe there will be. And actually, our board had a little bit of discussion about this. And as you noted, this will create a lot of interest, not only from our membership, but from our fans who follow football. And so as a result, we're likely going to open this up to our membership to have some more discussion leading into the town meetings. Recently, we've had some concern from administrators that, you know, there's such a tight time frame of when the bylaw amendment proposals are posted. We have the town meetings, and then all of a sudden they have to be voting on them. So this one, the districting piece that you've talked about, is likely something that will engage our membership, make them aware of this, the likelihood of this proposal being made, and then let them kind of discuss it in the early fall, even in August and September as football gets underway. So, and, you know, give them a chance to ask us, IHSA, how we see this playing out, And while the football participation numbers aren't perfect, while we can do it, as Sam has noted, we're not going to make everybody happy, much like we don't make everybody happy when we establish geographic subsectionals or regionals or those kind of things in our other sports. So, you know, it'll be according to what the policy is that's created, and if that's the direction of our membership to have us district, we'll do our best at it. But you're right, it's going to create a lot of discussion leading into and during that town meeting process. So as we've had discussion for years about football and conference jumping, I think generally, at least our football advisory committee, who is the group that kind of decided to bring this forward, with all that conference jumping happening, I think there's more support than there has been in the past, in my opinion, about this districting piece. So we don't control it here at IHSA. As you noted, it's going to be a member-driven decision, and we'll just have to wait and see where that ends up.
All right, we began our conversation, and this is the final thing I'm going to ask Craig Anderson about. Born and raised in Cambridge, Illinois, and I believe childhood friends with that no-good bum, Tom Hassan. We're just kidding, of course. I know you're well aware of what all the people around here think about Tom Hassan, the Rock Ridge communities, the Mercer County communities, just people in general in western Illinois. A few words about a childhood friend, Tom Hassan.
Yeah, well, what people don't probably know is, in addition to being a childhood friend and teammate, we were college teammates, playing football at Monmouth College, and then we're roommates for 2 years at Monmouth. So, I have a lot of great history with Tom Hassan and believe him to be a fantastic friend. And what people know and understand about him and Katie and Devin, everything is spot on about the quality of person he is, and been praying for him for a lot of days and will continue to, and can't wait to go visit him and see him get to full recovery and him to be an impact for young people that he teaches and coaches and encourages. I just can't wait to see him back on his feet, healthy and doing the good things he does. We love him and I support him 100%.
All right. Long live the Cambridge Vikings, the Monmouth College Fighting Scots, and Tom Hassan. Craig Anderson, we've taken enough of your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.
Craig Anderson, Executive Director of the IHSA, joining us.